Wow, you're supplying your own sound effects. That's great.
Working on it. Well, I went shopping at the more reasonable hour of noon. instead of nine in the morning, where I start to feel a little sheepish. I picked up some Jefferson's bourbon. Pretty good, smooth. There was one that was, I believe it was a rye, and it was a ocean.
The Jefferson's Ocean.
Yeah. Barreled at sea. I don't know. It makes it sound like they barrel it and like stick it on a ship and do a little spin around the ocean and come back. Which would be kind of funny.
But like, that would be kind of funny.
This bourbon has been at sea for the last 5 years.
That's so funny.
What are you drinking?
I'm boring still. I'm finishing the standard Four Roses that I had
Whiskey
in my closet.
Is, house.
Yeah, I gotta branch out a little bit. So, right.
So next time you're gonna have something different.
Next time, and as I mentioned, there were several Basil Haydens that went down last night.
Oh, yeah, you had a Whiskey Thursday.
A Whiskey Thursday followed by a Whiskey Friday. So cheers.
So, John, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about legal hygiene. The idea is that I want to talk about keeping your company clean. So legal aspects of certain things that I see that people are not doing correctly.
That dirty up their companies.
That dirty up their companies, exactly.
You know, there's an interesting part of this to me, which is that I think often when folks in their business journeys, the like legal entity creation, like where you make an LLC or an S-Corp or whatever, that feels very much like a one and done thing. Cool, I set up my LLC, now I have my LLC, and now moving on, now I just go do business. I don't have to think about that anymore.
Yes.
And it seems like your point is like, oh no shit, you have to think about this all the time.
That is for sure. Yeah. And, you know, you can be excused from not really knowing what to do with the new LLC that you created if it's your first time and you're not used to kind of running a business as a legal entity that's separate from yourself. The more interesting unclean things are when people, you know, are experienced business people and they have, you know, they're used to running companies or they have multiple companies and they still do things that are unhygienic, yeah. Right?
It seems like from the examples and from what you're talking about, this is pretty easy to do. Model your boundaries. And I was thinking about this not necessarily in terms of like keeping your business clean or like hygiene, mm-hmm. but in terms of relationships and boundaries as like another way to frame this, in that like you and your business are in a relationship, but you are separate beings. The business is an entity, but also there's certainly a lot of clients that I get kind of woo with, and we talk about like the spirit of their business or like their business as a sort of separate being, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With its own kind of energy and needs and whatever. Framing it that way, at least for me, helps me make sense of it. I think better than the hygiene thing. I wonder if there's like a good metaphor we could come up with.
Well, I think that depends on what perspective you're looking at it from.
Okay.
From a lawyer's standpoint, you know, we set up legal entities in order to create a liability separation between the individuals who are the owners and participants in the business and the activities of the business itself, right? I'm not sure there's a really great analogy in that one. It's just, you know, it's just important to maintain that difference so we could talk about like what that actually means.
Maybe it's like you can't get in trouble for somebody else's problems. Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, that's the purpose. The purpose is that the business is going to conduct activities. It's going to create revenue, hopefully, but it's also going to create liability, right? Intentionally or unintentionally. The point of the legal entity is that that entity has its own assets and it has its own liabilities, right. And those are separate from yours. So that if there's a liability that exceeds the assets of the business, the creditor should not be able to come after you and ask you to pay it or you to put your house up, any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
It, it's of the company. So, you know, that's the legal thing. From the relationship standpoint or the business standpoint, my analogy is that the business is this container. The container is the place where you put all the things that we were just talking about, right? You put the assets, you put the liabilities, you put it, it's there for a legal purpose, but it's also there for this relationship purpose. So you could think about it as a thing that is separate from you as the owner and operator of the business.
Which is also helpful, like in not letting your business consume you too much. You and I see this all the time, like folks that have gotten over involved or like their business and themselves, their identities have merged a bit. And that can make things like taking a vacation or pricing or relationships with your team or employees. Like it just, it kind of like, it makes other sorts of relationships more complicated if you don't have enough separation between yourself and the business.
Do you find that with your clients? Like being able to say, like, here's this thing that's separate from you allows you to say, now you could be objective about what's going on in that thing.
Yeah, well, and I'll say one thing that's directly connected really to what we're talking about with the legal aspects and the container of it, which it helps folks understand what they're responsible for and what they're not, more importantly. Like, I think one of the things I commonly find is that people take on and feel really weighed down by responsibility in their business around, like, how they're making money or their clients or their team. Like, there's just a lot of weight. And one of the things that often I've found in my work that really helps people is to re-identify the business as a separate entity that actually bears that responsibility more. Like you kind of like take some of that weight off your shoulders and like give it back. I'm an agent of this business. I'm in a relationship with this business. I do things on behalf of this business, but I can also ask it to take care of me. I'm not the sole entity human responsible here. Like there's also this business that can operate separate from me. So there's like, it's almost like a way to clarify obligation and responsibility and kind of lighten the load because you're actually sharing it with this business that's holding all this stuff, like you said.
That's a little woo
and energetic, but it actually makes it like really lands for people as a process frequently.
I get that. I mean, it is kind of woo and energetic, but it actually is the point, which is,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And you should have a relationship with your business that's separate from you as a person. And maintaining that relationship is what's going to translate on the legal side to creating this separation, liability separation for what goes on there versus what you're doing personally.
Like when you say liability, I just want to be super clear. That's like debt. That's like getting sued.
Claims. Yep.
Like things like that.
It's real stuff. It's any expense that the business intentionally incurs, like if you sign a lease or take a loan for debt. Yep. And then it's also, claims that come up through the operations of the business if somebody has a reason to sue you for some reason. So long as the entities are sort of run correctly, they should stand up and be that separation between the two. And that's the point.
Businesses have life cycles, and often the humans will outlast the business.
Yes.
And so I feel like that's another part of this, is that your business may come to a natural conclusion or an early death or whatever, and you're going to continue to live your life, and you don't want your business's bullshit to come and bite you in the ass personally after you move on.
If you can help it. we've talked about on other episodes when we were talking about dissolutions of businesses where business owners have taken on personal liability for the debts of the entity and had to deal with that when the entity is shut down. But again, at least it's a conscious choice to say, okay, I am now intentionally blurring the lines between myself and my business by signing this personal guarantee.
What you want to talk about today is three ways that people unintentionally seem to blur their boundaries most often.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a couple ways that actually have just come up recently in my practice with some clients. Number one is blurring the line between entity and entity.
Okay, so folks that have multiple businesses or multiple related entities set up within one business ecosystem,
yes.
Maybe?
Yes, because we've been talking about blurring the line between individual and entity, but you can also blur it from entity to entity, okay? Like when you have multiples, right?
You know, there's folks that have separate or related businesses that do different activities, but there's also a lot of folks I know that have like real estate holdings in one LLC and then the actual business activities in a whole different entity, but they're clearly like the real estate is housing the business, so they're very related.
They're related, and sometimes they have similar names even, you know, like it could be John Gerber Real Estate Holdings, and then it could be John Gerber Business Operations.
That seems like a really good way to make this more confusing to your point.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Okay. It could be a company that just has like different operating subsidiaries that either have the same lines of business or are slightly different lines of business, so they have them organized so that, you know, if I have an existing business and I have a new idea that I want to try as basically a startup, I might want to set that up as a separate entity, separate company, so that I can fund it, give it a shot. But if it has liabilities and blows up, it doesn't affect my, you know, bread and butter business that I've been running for a long time, right? I have an example of it with a client that has done this many times. They have many entities. Like, they are a sophisticated entity maker.
I sense a little judgment, John.
Because they're a sophisticated entity maker, when they decided to go into a new line of business, and in this case, they had an outside partner, and they were going to be the manager of this business. So they had, essentially, they were a fiduciary for the whole operation. And we made a new entity to be that company that was going to be responsible for running this business. And it had a name, but its name was similar to the other company's names. And we talked about it before they entered into this whole deal. I'm like, we'll set up a new company that's going to be your operator in this business, because the last thing you want to do is have your like money-making business subject to liability of this new venture, especially if you're the fiduciary who's responsible for running it, right? So we did that. And
what did they do?
So, like, and you know, we did it. It set it all up. He went away, signed documents, did stuff, you know, whatever. A year and a half later, that business, needless to say, is not doing well. And there's going to be issues. There's going to be issues with the investors. There's going to be issues with creditors. Like, and his company, which was managing this whole thing, is all in the middle of that shit, right? I don't know who has rights or not necessarily, but the point is, like, he's going to be facing some claims. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, cool, send me over the, you know, obviously the first thing you have to do is look at the agreement, right? Yep. So I'm like, send me over the agreement. And I read through it. And needless to say, you know where this is going.
I do.
He signed it with his other company, signed it with his other company, as opposed to the one that we set up. And so needless to say, you know, a couple of years later, instead of having this thing that really didn't have any assets to deal with, now we had to deal with this company that was valuable. I know. Again, similar names, probably an easy mistake to make, except that, like, this person knew about this stuff and should have known. Not a novice.
I take that to mean this stuff's really easy to screw up, even if you are fairly far along in your journey.
It could seem so, like, innocuous, too. Oh, well, I just signed this contract based on this, my normal company name, and I put it on there, no problem, right? I just didn't think about it. But the implications of that now are huge, potentially, right? That's the problem.
Because you've dragged your other business into this other one, right?
You have. Yeah. You have. So the theme here is, like, actually paying attention to this stuff. Like, we do it for a reason, and you know better, and you have to take care on it.
Right. I wonder if some of it isn't, kind of like what I was just talking about with the relational aspect. Like, the entities, if you don't really ground them, can sometimes feel really abstract. Like, it's this name on a paper. It's some numbers that exist within, like, the state or federal.
It's a circle on a whiteboard.
Yeah. Part of the reason that I, like, work with folks to kind of ground that entity into a being that they have a relationship with is to make it real, to make it something that's concrete that they're actually grappling with and not something that's sort of fuzzy and abstract out there, because it's real whether you're respecting it that way or not. And I think part of it making it concrete is actually to give yourself more agency in how you're interacting with it and treating with it. Like, it's not just something that's existing out there in the abstract. There is a real container. There's a strategy for why you created the specific container the way you did, whether you know what that was or not. Maybe your lawyer told you once and then, it didn't mean anything at the time, but
I think that's really important. That would be a really great way for people to, like, keep that in their mind as they're conducting their businesses. There's probably ways to get it to, like, stick into people's heads more that, like, these are, when you have multiple corporate, multiple entities where it's not just like you and your company.
And you need, like, a little avatar.
Well, I was going to say, it's the kind of thing that, remember I had the big whiteboard in my office?
Yeah, I love that whiteboard.
And, me too. I miss that whiteboard so much. And like, drawing these pictures with the legal entities on them and everything and the lines. I miss that.
You gotta get a new one
too. By the way, that office was like the big windows. It was bright, and
that was
it had
great office. Cool. All right, yes. So that is example number one. When you have multiple entities, and you need to keep them squeaky clean and separate.
And then, like, around the exact same time, another thing happened that also was sort of, in my view, like a careless entity thing. Their situation was that they had a company that was operating, and it ended up not doing well, not succeeding, right? I guess that's sort of also a theme here. It's like, this stuff becomes relevant when the liability kind of all hits. Yeah. And one of the times that hits is when you're winding things down. So that's what we were doing with this company. And it had multiple creditors out there that vary, mostly customers and people that this company did business with, right? But at that point, you're dealing with limited resources to be able to do that, and in some ways at that point that's a good thing. I mean, you don't want to be in that position, but if you're the company who's winding down and you're essentially judgment proof because you have no assets anymore, I mean, you're not going to go through a bankruptcy necessarily, but your position with your creditors is, if you sue me, you're suing a shell, and
good luck getting
it, but you're wasting your time and money. Yep. When I talked to the client about where they were and how we were going to wind it down and what we were going to say to the creditors and what the outcome, therefore, it was likely to be to their company, which was that, it'll all eventually kind of just go away.
I'm like on the edge of my seat now, like being like, what did they do?
Well, it's not that dramatic. Okay. So as we're in this process, and I'm starting to help them, communicate this out to their creditors, they tell me, we made a bunch of investments through this entity, and we're holding like a few million dollars in assets in this LLC.
But you know that like cartoon thing where like your eyes kind of like fly out of your head? Whoops.
Yeah, I was like that too. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
So that means that those assets are up for grabs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All those assets belong to the LLC.
That sucks.
And the creditors of the LLC are entitled to go after the assets of the LLC.
Whoops.
That's a big whoops, you know? And but again, if it was somebody who didn't know better, I'd be like, this is not an interesting topic of conversation for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point is that these are people who knew or, should have known. And it's a lesson. It's a hygiene question. Like, you got to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
So needless to say, the approach for dealing with the creditors changed, and it cost them some money.
I mean, that's an interesting thing, because I could see how, you know, I often see this in the like personal, the financial side of things, like keeping separate bank accounts, personal versus business, and being really tidy about that, because it's easy to get sloppy and just like pay for stuff out of the business and be like, whatever, I'll clean it up on the books later. But to actually move that money out of the business before you do anything with it, like there's a clear bookkeeping paper trail that you create when you actually move funds out of a business into a personal account.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's sort of, so I'm going to like, I'm going to generalize it. This is also a bookkeeping issue.
It totally is. I mean, I know in my own experience, like I'm very careful about that. So if I need money for something, I take a draw, put it in my personal bank account, and then I pay the bill.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If for some reason, one of my things needed money, I would make a individual contribution and then pay it out of that.
Yep.
But you're right. I mean, this is an area where, again, the line between the personal and the business can be blurred. And the result of that could be that your creditors have rights against you personally where they shouldn't, and they should just be against the business.
John, there's certainly a lot of businesses that would invest money or keep, you know, like where the business actually doing those activities makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, in terms of what we're talking about today, should you be more cautious about that? Like, if you're going to have long-term investments, if you're going to put money in the stock market or community fundraiser, whatever, wherever you're going to park like excess capital, essentially, is what we would be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, from what we're talking about, you might want to seriously consider moving that into your personal life and then making those investments rather than having the business hold them.
You might, or you might want to move them into a separate entity. I think your real estate example is a good one.
Yeah.
There. Like if you're a business and then you're like, hey, we have enough money to buy the building that we're occupying, you know.
Well, in that one, I've seen it from folks that are exiting and looking to sell their business, that having those two things as separate pieces in the negotiation is actually really helpful often.
Do they sell them separately or they value them?
It gives them options. I mean, not that you can't break things off in an exit if they, you know, if the real estate and the business activities and goodwill and whatever were all in the same container, you could certainly say, I'm not selling the real estate, I'm just selling the ongoing concern. But I think it gives you options. So maybe you want to sell the business and you want to keep the real estate, you want to keep whoever you're selling to as your future tenant or somebody else as a tenant or whatever. So it just gives you kind of different leverage, I think is usually what I see.
Uh-huh. So circling back to your other question, you know, I think part of that depends on what you intend to use with the capital that you've generated, right? If you really are saying, okay, the business generated capital, I'm the owner, that's mine, I'm going to go take it and do something that's an individual thing, yeah, take it out and go do whatever, right? But if you are if you've generated it and you're saying, I'm going to do something else with it, I want to keep it so that I could maybe use it for something for my employees then that's not the case, right? Sure. It still might make sense to take it and put it like in another entity. So you have like sister companies there, but you're still going to dedicate it to that.
And you got to name them differently.
If you do, it probably makes it easier for you to keep track of. I never really think about that too, though, either, because, you know, I have lots of them where it's just sort of like, you know, XYZ1, XYZ2. And
I know, man, but now I'm thinking about how much easier it is to mix them up if they're like almost the same name, you know?
It's a very good point. It's just naming sucks. Naming's really hard to come up with. So, you know, if you get a good one, you kind of want to stick with it.
All right. So that was number two, which is where you get messy between your entity and the individual and sort of blur where assets are held is a lot of, I think, what we were just talking through.
Yes. Yes. Number three was sort of related to that, and that was this piercing concept.
Let's talk about what piercing means, not in the body context.
Piercing was the situation where you've done things in the way that you operate your business that gives the creditor of your business the right to say, you know what, that business did not really exist as an entity. It really was this person all the time. And so I'm entitled to make my claim against the individual.
Don't go get all of your mani-pedis on the business if you don't do something where you legitimately need them professionally.
But seriously, using your company bank account like it's your own bank account, if it came down to it and you said to your credit, you know, if you were in that situation, you said, well, sue my entity, and they'd be like, your money's going back and forth in this thing. Yep. And, you know, yep. Technically, like if someone wants to look it up, they could say piercing the corporate veil. I know, it sounds fancy.
Yeah. But basically what you're talking about is running the business too much like your own personal / fund and not keeping clear records and transactions between you and the business person.
I mean, that's probably the most common way that will get you in trouble.
Are there folks that can just get away with a sole proprietorship and it doesn't really matter?
A lot of people could get away with a sole proprietorship and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The biggest question there is like, what kind of, again, from a lawyer's standpoint, what kind of liability is your business looking at, right? In a lot of service businesses, you are not, you know, no one's going to die if you make an error. You know what I mean? Like you're not doing work that has super high value necessarily where you're looking at big, you know, like if it's IP issues, you know, that's an area where I'm like, you know, if you're dealing with issues of copyright and IP and that kind of thing, then the idea of being a sole prop doesn't make sense. Right. I mean, sometimes in contracts, you're going to have to actually make an individual representation like that, and you won't be able to leave it in the company. Anytime you're doing that, you know you're doing it, as opposed to like just sort of being like, oh man, now I found out my house is subject to this claim, right? Yeah. The other thing I was going to say, though, like, you know this, that deciding whether to LLC or not LLC, if you're a starting sole prop kind of
low
business.
Low stakes question.
It's a cost benefit analysis, and the cost is very low, and the benefit, even if it's just like a little benefit, makes it worth it, right? So if what you're doing with any level of seriousness, just do it.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't change your accounting. It doesn't, like, it's just, it's
no. It's like a few hundred dollars.
It's a no-brainer. $few hundred max, and you're like ready to go. Again, I love entities, but you know, that one to me is kind of a no-brainer. That said, back to the question of like making sure that person knows how to use that legally and to sign things correctly, you know, is important.
Well, it's tricky because you normally, like, you're going to sign contracts with your personal name.
Maybe.
On behalf of...
Well, yes, but that's the key.
Yeah.
The on behalf of, or with a title, or actually inserting the company name and saying by, you know, with
actually,
a title.
This is a good point, John. I feel like we should underline this of like, for example, like my client contracts, I sign my actual legal name, like personal name, when I'm like sending to clients to sign. Like my countersign is my name, but it does say Wanderwell. So it's not
Kate.
And the same thing on the client side is actually like when I don't put the person's name in, I always put their company name. So I'm like kind of like protect.
You're helping them.
I'm like helping them a little bit.
Yeah,
like
you're helping them. You're helping them against you. Yeah. But that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Sometimes you have to like manipulate an agreement to get it to look the way you want it to look, because it might just have a line for your signature.
Yeah.
Then you have to decide, you know, do I write the company name and buy my name with the title?
Yeah.
Do you just sign it, but then underneath it, write your title and say like on behalf of XYZ LLC, you know, something like that is.
I have to say, this is not something I pay attention to.
Really?
No. I mean, I think I know about it, but like, trying to think, like, is this something that I would think about when somebody sent me a contract? And I'm not sure it is.
It's very interesting to hear that. You know what? Maybe this is more of an issue than even I thought it was. I think so. The contract is the only way to determine who are the parties to the deal,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to read it and see what it says.
Yep.
And does it say Kate or does it say Kate on behalf of Wanderwell?
Interesting. Yeah, no, I think this is a bigger issue, probably. I'm not sure that all people probably even know about it to the extent that I would think about it. But yeah, it's not something that I'm like looking for when I'm signing stuff.
Well, that kind of goes back to your point, which is, you know, you have this relationship with your legal entity.
Yep.
And like that is something that kind of does need to be in your mind when you're doing business as your company.
One of the ways I talk about it and think about it is like you are a representative of your company. This is a really helpful concept. Like when you're asking people for money, the discomfort of asking for money, one of the kind of tricks you can play on yourself is just to I am a representative of Wanderwell asking for money. I am not Kate asking for money. I am a representative. I'm doing
that's
it on behalf. Like, I'm the agent. Like,
yes.
The corollary to that is like your business is, it's a protective entity. Like it can get between you and somebody that is making you uncomfortable or like don't want to deal with personally and stuff like that. So I feel like some of it is just being clear on like, you know, I'm being the agent. Representative, I can insert the business between me and something else because it's there to protect. It's my protector.
It is. I mean, that's the mindset that people have to have. And then the tool is they need to understand how that gets expressed when they actually sign things into business.
So if I get a contract and it just has a signature line and I should put Wanderwell and then sign it or something like that. That's what you're telling me.
The ideal way to do it would be to insert the word Wanderwell and then say by, you know, Kate, president. So it's got the company, clearly your name and title. So you are signing as a representative of the company for the company, right?
Got
so
it.
The party itself.
Yep.
And also like at the top of the contract where it says, you know, this is an agreement between so-and-so and so-and-so, make sure it has your company name and not your personal name. Right.
Got it.
Just something to look
like
at
that.
Every
that's
single
like,
time.
That's an elegant little bar of hotel
it
soap
is.
To carry around with you.
It is. And you know what? Sometimes you can't sandwich the company name in at the signature line that way. But if that happens, you still want to sign it as yourself, president of Wanderwell. Just you need to make sure that it's clear that you're signing as a representative of the entity. You want to make sure you sign Kate Tyson, you know, president of Wanderwell.
Yes.
Everybody needs to watch this.
Yes. And I think closing note, if you're still a sole proprietor, maybe consider whether that's still working for you.
Well, you know I love entities.
Of course you do. You're a small business attorney. Yes. Cool. This has been an interesting conversation, Don.
Yeah, fun.
Happy Friday. Cheers.
Happy Friday.
Thanks for listening to Whiskey Fridays. Whiskey Fridays is a collaboration between my friend and colleague, John Gerber, who you can find at unlawyer.com.
And my friend and colleague, Kate Tyson, who's at wanderwellconsulting.com.
If this episode resonated with you in any way, we'd love for you to share it with a friend.
And if you have any whiskey recommendations, please share those with us as well.
Talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Why is that such a weird word?
Hygiene?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like sounds gross.
It does sound gross, which I kind of like it. Legal hygiene, it's like fucking gross, so let's go with it, you know?